right. Hey there. I'm Tim Schumacher, as always, kind of filling in for our wonderful Anna once a month on the SaaS Group podcast, SaaS Unbound. And here I'm today with Colin Keeley. And yeah, we're actually doing a little bit of a similar thing, Colin, if I'm not mistaken, in a little bit of different sizes, but we're looking for, we're both kind of operators turned holdco companies in SaaS. Colin, what, for the listeners who don't know you yet, what is your company, Verne, and what do you do? And yeah, fill us in, please.
Yeah. So Colin Keeley, I live out in Austin, Texas nowadays. The main thing right now is Verne. So it's a software holding company. We own different software companies from like database backups to business management for pet care businesses is a focus of ours. And then people know me for my, I call them operating manuals. So I do like kind of business breakdowns and other holding companies or other, you know, business builders. And so that has gone pretty well. I also have a recruiting and staffing agency in Latin America called Jules. So Jules and Verne are the kind of the two main companies. But yeah, it's been great. I've seen your content, or at least like Pavel and other folks in your team's content for a while. So it's good to finally meet someone over there.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good to meet. Yeah, it seems like, you know, we've similar challenges running a holdco, recruiting. I'd love to pick your brain on Latin America, having traveled there last year extensively for a couple months. Really curious to hear your thoughts. And then also the operating manuals, I think, is super fascinating. Mark Leonard, you mentioned, we're a big fan of him, but just generally, like, how do you approach this topic? So yeah, let's dive right in. Let's talk quickly a little bit more about Verne. Like, what kind of companies are you looking for to acquire? What kind of size? What are other metrics you really care about? And when should a potential seller of a SaaS company contact you?
Yeah, we've been evolving on this. So it started out pretty similar to Constellation. We're just looking at vertical market software. We started smaller, like 200K in ARR. Now we're trying to say a million plus in ARR. So like 1 to 5 is kind of our sweet spot. Ideally vertical market software, but we're flexible on that. So to date, we've only done, you know, bootstrap profitable companies. Those are easy. Over the last year or two, we spent a lot of time looking at these kind of venture orphans. So people that raise venture capital and either rocketing out of business or you know, fell off that path and aren't going to be able to raise more, and offering a soft landing to them. So those are more complicated deals, but we spent a lot of time on them. Trying to make it a win-win for everyone.
Cool. And how many deals have you done in both the regular bootstrapped field versus the venture orphans?
We bought 3 companies so far. So 3 software companies. And then I started this Jules one. Background, like, we came from a venture capital fund that was doing Series A deals. So like $1 million ARR vertical software companies. And then also we were a startup studio. So like a few times a year, we try to spin up new companies. So we try to move away from that and just do like buying product market fit, buying something that's already working and improving it. I fell back into it with Jules and this staffing company. And I may explore it kind of going forward. We'll see. But yeah, as of right now, mostly focused on the acquisitions.
Cool. Interesting. And so you have a venture capital background. Why did you choose to kind of go to the companies that actually have product market fit?
It's really hard doing a studio, even if you have money and you've done it before. It's just, you know, it's hard to find that product market fit. And we kind of discovered, you know, through reading stuff online that you could just buy something that's already working and improve it. And for me personally, as like a junior VC when I was there, it was always a little annoying to not have a control of your own destiny, really. I mean, you didn't have your hands on the wheel. So hopefully I was going to invest in like the next Uber. I could launch my own fund and, you know, go from there. But it's really beyond my control.
So I love to know, kind of, you said earlier that, you know, you're buying product market fit, you buy something that works and then improve on it. What do you improve? Like, what's your operating manual, so to say, as much as you can share?
Yeah. So I would say it's different for every business. As we kind of get to know it, I'm always keeping like a running list of things that can improve. But tactically, for most of them, we try to walk in there and not be overly prescriptive. So we poll existing customers. We ask, like, what's annoying about the product? What features would you like to see added? You know, how happy are you? Like a net promoter score. Trying to get like a baseline from there. Then we rank, you know, stuff we want to add. I would say tactically, in the past, I ran like large Google ad campaigns. So I throw a bunch of, you know, targeted traffic at it, kind of see where the funnel breaks down. And, you know, realistically, you buy something and you wish you could say like, oh, just throw sales and marketing at it. The reality is always like, you know, 6+ months of product improvements to get it in a position for growth.
Yeah.
Another big thing is like, I like Webflow a lot. So I'll often redo the marketing site, move everything to Webflow, kind of redo all the copywriting, redo all the positioning. And then the big easy lever is optimizing pricing. So adding more premium tiers with more features, you know, often raising prices, that kind of thing. Okay. For some of them, and, you know, it goes all the way to like the point where you're rewriting, you know, the apps completely as well.
Yeah. Okay. And in the three deals that you've done so far, did it work?
Yeah. First one we sold. So that was like 4 to 5 times cash on cash. So it was a great return. Second one, we're in the process of selling. It will be, you know, a win, but not a huge win. Like, I don't think we'll ever lose money on a deal. We never have. It was definitely a lot of lost time. It's just like, it just took a lot more labor than we anticipated to get it to a position that we liked. And then Scout is the one we're focusing on, this dog, you know, walking pet care software. And that one's going well, you know, but that's the most recent one. It's about a year old at this point.
Okay. Okay. So your playbook is not to hold the companies forever, but to actually resell them a few years down the road.
We had a lot. I would say our goal is to hold the best ones. So it's more of a buy and hold, but we're not religious about it. And so this was selling some of like the smaller ones that we didn't really want to focus on. But the goal going forward is, you know, buy great companies and hold great companies for sure.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. But so it means out of the three deals you've done so far, you've sold two and one you're still holding.
Yeah. The second sale is in process, okay. But we'll close by the end of the year probably. Have you guys sold anything? Are you exclusively buy and hold?
We are buy and hold, but we sold one business which we didn't get working. We didn't get growing. Majority of deals were very good, but that one didn't work out, and it became too small for us. And we actually sold it to someone who really cared about the product, who is continuing it further. That's been working well. But generally, yeah, we want to hold the businesses.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
Cool. So when you buy companies and then operate them, like how much you mentioned those operating manuals which you've written about on your website, like what are the things from the operating manuals of Mark and Andrew and Robert which you've written about and which impressed you the most and which you're really kind of trying to also do it the same way? What are maybe three things for the operators among our listeners which really impressed you?
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
So this is, I kind of wandered into this. I didn't come from a private equity background. So it's like I'm mostly self-taught. And this is building kind of my own mentors, so permissionless mentors. So my process is basically consuming everything I can on these guys that are, you know, in our space or in adjacent spaces and learning what I can. And I started sharing my notes with folks, and that was successful. People seemed to enjoy it. So I continued doing that. Then going down the line, you know, Mark Leonard, who's like, you know, the king figure in our space. So people I don't know, he's bought 600 plus vertical market software companies. The biggest thing with those guys is just like, they have an amazing outbound machine. So they're in touch with, they have a database of effectively every target ever. So it's like 50,000 plus. And then they have just an army of folks contacting them every 6 months. So they're always in discussion if anyone's, you know, thinking of selling. So that like decentralization and just the amazing outbound machine is like the biggest takeaway of those guys. Robert F. Smith is famous for his playbooks for, his 100-point checklist. And then they have these huge PDFs of like, you know, how do you incentivize a sales team with a bunch of examples. No one's seen these playbooks in their entirety. People that work on the teams have seen like, you know, the ones that are dedicated to whatever they're working on. I would love to get my hands on it. But yeah, that's a sought after book for sure in our space. So bringing out those playbooks and, you know, running it through on each company is a big takeaway with those guys. Who else is there? Andrew Wilkinson and Tiny is always fascinating. So very similar to us, they buy internet companies, although they focus less on software, more on like community-based companies recently. And Andrew is just very, very good at delegation. Even to this day, like if you talk to him, he'll often hand you off to someone else on his team. So that's always funny to see. But he's just very, very good at getting things off his plate and, you know, putting on someone else's back to deal with. But yeah, I kind of take away different things from everyone. And I try to keep up with it. I have so many that are like 50 to 80% done that I just have to publish. They're just in like note-taking form.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I read your last one about bending spoons a couple of days ago, and I was quite fascinated. What do you think of these guys?
I didn't know there were that many of you guys in Europe doing this. I know Constellation has their big arm in Europe, but yeah, they were a fascinating one. Kind of came out of nowhere, bought their first company for $10,000, so super small, like 12 years ago, and now they're buying ones, you know, approaching $1 billion or more dollars. Evernote is their most famous. The weirdest thing, I mean, their general playbook's not that crazy.
A billion in enterprise value, $1 billion.
Yeah, Evernote was like $100 million plus in ARR, which, you know, doesn't get to $1 billion in enterprise, but they say they can take down up to $2 billion in enterprise value now companies. So they raise kind of a war chest to do that. But their general playbook of like fire the US team, move them to a lower cost place, which is in Milan for them for most of it, raise prices, is not that crazy. It's almost not even worthy of a playbook, but I thought it was interesting that they're doing this with like companies charging $10 a month for users or in pricing. It just seems like a remarkably hard way to build big businesses of, you know, super low pricing, these kind of consumer products.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But they've gotten some really big name brands like WeTransfer, Evernote. Those are big consumer brands.
Yeah, Hopin, Steamyard, Meetup. Were you familiar with them?
Yeah. They're kind of in your neighborhood. Hopin was a fire sale, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Hopin is UK based, right? Yeah, and that one was a fire sale. I think they bought it on the cheap, but still an interesting piece of software.
Yeah, yeah. They were a fun one.
On the topic of labor costs, you just mentioned this case of them moving companies to Milan, which is, I wouldn't consider totally a low cost neighborhood, but yeah, certainly a significantly lower cost than the US. And you're doing something similar with Latin America, I read. It's like, can you walk me through that? Like, what's your experience with Latin America? Where in Latin America? What is advice you would give founders, SaaS founders who are also looking to get some talent there?
Yeah, so we ended up this like scratching our own itch. So we were hiring people all over the world, hired a bunch of folks in the Philippines. The time zone issue is substantial. You basically don't overlap with them. Or if you do, they don't sleep, and that, you know, their health degrades over time, their work quality degrades. That's always a mess. And then culturally, they're just very different. So in the Philippines, they're somewhat skittish. They don't like confrontation. So they'll just disappear. Extreme weather knocks out their internet, knocks out their power all the time. So endless issues, basically. And then we started looking closer to home and discovered, you know, there's a whole continent beneath the North America, South America, and Central America in the same time zone, much more similar culturally. And not substantially more expensive than like the Philippines, maybe like 20% more on average, and just awesome talent kind of across the board from finance to tech to, you know, marketing, sales, operations, kind of everything. And so we launched it ourselves, got recruiters down there, started scaling it up for our own teams. And then I just have a lot of friends that are also like software founders or holdco operators, and they started using the service and then, you know, open it up to the wider world. But yeah, Jules is the name of the service. We do staffing and recruiting for kind of everything in Latin America. But our big ones are like bookkeepers, okay, accountants, marketing, sales folks, a lot of operations, okay, folks, and mid-level and senior, not just like a very little actual junior folks. So higher tier talent. As far as actual countries, Argentina is probably our biggest base. We have recruiters in basically all the countries at this point, but Buenos Aires and Cordoba is like the second largest city in Argentina, are probably our most common hubs.
Cool. And so how many people do you have?
On our team, we probably have like 20 folks, and then we have, you know, staffing operation. So a lot of people, if you count it that way.
Cool. Okay. That's good. Yeah, that's you're right. I think the time zone is always one big argument. It's a little bit like parts of Eastern Europe for Western Europe, although that's definitely the arbitrage difference is by no means what it used to be. But I agree with you that the question whether you can actually have enough working hours in the day together often matters more than squeezing out the last bit of price. And of course, also the cultural part.
Yeah, well, I guess for you guys, it's mostly Eastern Europe would be the equivalent, right? Or do you hire people in like South Africa or anything?
Exactly.
That would be closer in time zone? Yeah.
We have a little bit in South Africa, indeed. Yeah, but Eastern Europe is actually a majority of people, which also is a very good education in mathematics and computer science. So there's definitely a real base, which is there.
For sure. Yeah, we have developers over there as well. They're great.
Yeah, cool. Good. Yeah. So what do you focus most of your time on building Vern, or the consulting, or the staffing agency, or is it kind of all in between?
I like to think of it as seasons. So like when we do an acquisition, my partner he's like a CTO by profile. So he's the tech and product side of things. And so when we do a new acquisition or we have a new deal, it's kind of like drop everything and focus on that and get it in a good position. And then we put in an operator. So at your scale, or you know, most people at a bigger scale are better at like Indiana Jonesing, like the old founder walks away or sticks around, and then you swap in a new person real quick and you never have to take it over. We haven't to date done that. Over time, we'll evolve to that. But so we worked on Scout really hard for a while, the pet care software. Then I launched this Jules staffing company like a year ago. So I've been focused on that, but we're always looking at new deals, and a new deal pops up, you know, I'll walk away from Jules and that's in a good position with good people running it. You know, I'll move on to the next thing. But yeah, at the moment, more Jules and then trying to get back to content, which I was great about for a long time, basically took like a year off, and I'm trying to get back to writing, you know, more.
Okay.
Cool. What are you focused on?
Your writing is really...
Thanks.
Well, I'm focused on two things. So one is SaaS Group is my SaaS company. And then kind of also run a climate fund. It's a venture fund. So it's almost the polar opposite, because just like you know, SaaS Group, we acquire companies that are either bootstrapped or venture orphans. I like the term venture orphans, by the way. You coined it. I'm going to remember that one. So that's what we do with SaaS Group. And with World Fund, we're on the polar opposite. We're investing 300 million. So it's a decent sized fund. It's a 300 million euro fund, investing into climate tech. So into the next unicorns in driving decarbonization. And of course, a lot of that is heavy tech, asset heavy. You can't bootstrap that, but very, very cutting edge stuff, deep tech stuff. And it's really kind of almost the polar opposite. But there, of course, I have a lot of people who are not software people like me, but they're physicists, chemists, biologists. So they do the hard stuff.
Nice. Yeah. It's a fun variety.
Yeah. 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 Those are the two things, but yeah, let's wrap it up. I think what would be curious also, you know, how can people reach you if they have a software company, 200K or more in ARR, which they want to sell, how can they reach you?
Colin Keeley on Twitter is probably the easiest place to find me. My DMs are full of people trying to pitch me, you know, outbound lead gen crap, but I'll sort through it and try to find your meaningful message in there. But yeah, otherwise, you know, colinkeeley.com and my email's on there as well for all my writing and everything.
Okay. How do you filter out of curiosity? How do you deal with all the stuff coming in through the various channels? And any secret, any advice, asking for a friend?
I'm hopeful Elon fixes it at some point and, you know, filters that down. I limit it to just the people that have like a check mark, so they pay for Twitter, but a lot of these outbound people pay for it, so it doesn't work great. So I just check it periodically and scroll through it. But yeah, if it's any hint of like, I'm trying to sell you something immediately, I just scroll past it. No secrets, I guess, is the answer. It's just a pain.
Okay. You just ignore that part, or you respond with an unsubscribe or something, or?
No, I just ignore the junk ones. This is on Twitter. If it was Gmail or something, you mark it as spam, which, I don't know whether it makes a big difference or not, but
okay,
you try.
I don't know. I mean, that's the hard thing these days, is where there's a lot more software helping people to write emails to the right prospects. I get like dozens of those emails, but the thing is, if you don't do anything, you get like a whole chain of follow-ups, which is also automatically sent. And so it's really tough to deal with.
Yeah, for Gmail, I mark it as spam. So assuming it's still coming from the same sender, it will not go to your inbox. It'll skip the inbox going forward. But yeah, it's annoying. And those are so good that people are just constantly swapping new emails and still targeting you.
Yeah. But no, that's ripe for invention. Because, I mean, there are emails and intros which we want to get. I mean, if you're in deal flow like you are or like I am, there are a lot of things you want to hear. And really kind of the question is, how do you actually filter that? And that's tough. But yeah, if you ever invent something, ping me. I'd be curious.
I think that real answer is to get a like virtual assistant that goes through your email and does a first pass and like filters out stuff that's worthwhile versus not. I think the answer is just a human, unfortunately.
Probably AI at some point. Cool. All right. Well, thank you very much. Pleasure talking.
Great to meet you.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.